The views expressed on this program are solely those of the speaker and do not reflect the views and opinions of Centennial Securities. Be reminded that this podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for investment decisions. Happy Friday! Welcome to the Weekly Investment Podcast, where we discuss the week's must-know investment news and how it affects your money. I am your host, Walter. This week we discuss NYCB, February's jobs report, and the S&P's next move. It's been another exciting week in the investment world, so let's crack right into the news. On Thursday, New York Community Bancorp said it lost 7% of its deposits over the last month. This news came to light after the struggling regional lender announced a $1 billion capital raise and a leadership shakeup. What does NYCB's troubles mean for regional banks in general? This week's cash infusion is the latest development in a turbulent start to the year for NYCB. The bank disclosed in late January that it was dramatically raising the allowance for loan losses due to the potential issue of overexposure to commercial real estate. Since then, the bank's credit rating was cut to junk status and a new CEO has been named. Investors have spoken, with NYCB stock down 65% year-to-date. The questions surrounding NYCB are reminiscent of those that swirled around Silicon Valley Bank, Signature Bank, and First Republic before all three failed in spring of 2023. Those banks were among several regionals that struggled as higher interest rates led some depositors to move their accounts elsewhere. However, there are some key differences between those failed banks and NYCB. First, about 80% of NYCB's deposits are currently backstopped by insurance from the FDIC, leaving only about 20% uninsured. It was some of those uninsured deposits that left over the last month. Second, the fact that $1 billion was invested before the bank failed is telling. If the bank was due for an impending failure, then why not wait until that happened and buy the remaining assets on the cheap? Clearly, some investors thought it worth the risk. However, the U.S. economy continues to be strong, and inflation is still above the Federal Reserve's 2% target. As such, the prospect for higher-for-longer interest rates could keep pressure on regional banks, who tend to be exposed to commercial real estate. My sense is that we haven't quite seen the last of regional banks making headlines for all the wrong reasons. February's jobs report was released today, highlighting that last month was better than expected. Here's what you need to know from the data. First, the headline numbers. Non-farm payrolls increased by 275,000 for the month, while the jobless rate moved higher to 3.9%, according to the Labor Department. Economists surveyed by Dow Jones had been looking for about 200,000 new jobs. The Labor Department also downwardly revised January's gains to 229,000, down from 353,000, and December's gain also was revised down to 290,000 from 333,000. Wages rose just 0.1% from the prior month, slightly below the estimate, and were up 4.3% from a year ago, just below the 4.5% gain in January. Where jobs are growing has changed a little bit. Job creation skewed toward part-time positions. Full-time jobs decreased by 187,000, while part-time employment rose by 51,000. From a sector standpoint, healthcare led the way with 67,000 new jobs. Government was again a big contributor with 52,000 new jobs, and restaurant and bars added 42,000. Other gainers included construction, transportation and warehousing, as well as retail. January's jobs report also showed similar gains in a wide range of industries, and not just the three sectors that have driven gains over the last year or so, those being healthcare, leisure and hospitality, and government. February's jobs report may increase the chances of an interest rate decrease beginning sooner rather than later. The downward revisions for December and January, coupled with the rise in the unemployment rate to 3.9%, being the reasons why. February's unemployment rate is the highest unemployment rate in just over 2 years. And if the unemployment rate ticks above 4%, then the Fed is getting closer to cooling off a red-hot labor market. The S&P 500 index hit another new high this week, and it is up over 20% in the last 4 months. How long can the rally in stocks continue? History tells us that all-time highs are usually followed by newer highs, over the short term anyway. Previously, when the S&P 500 gained more than 20% over a four-year period, the index was higher 25 times 6 months later, compared to lower just 3 times, and higher 25 times 1 year later, compared to just 3 times lower. On average, after a four-month gain of over 20%, the market was up about 7.5% after 6 months, and by almost 14% a year later. Okay, all good, but what should you do with this information? History also tells us that the market tends to be more volatile in an election year. Not a concern in isolation, but those above average gains in the S&P 500 that occur after a four-month rally that I mentioned earlier, well, in election years, those gains tend to be considerably lower. Certainly not predictive, but worth noting. Also, a 6 month or 1 year period is a very short time for investing, and taking a longer, more strategic look at your investments is worthwhile. Your portfolio is likely to have some big gains, so you may want to rebalance or diversify into other areas. As the old farmer saying goes, make hay while the sun is shining. Well, the sun is definitely shining on big U.S. stocks, particularly the Magnificent Seven, so plan accordingly. Next week, we discuss a high-flying company who just surpassed Tesla in market cap. Can you guess who it is? One hint, it's not an AI. Join us next Friday for that and much, much more. Thank you for listening, and please have a nice weekend when you get there. Talk to you next week.